This episode of The Accidental Entrepreneur is sponsored by NowSite Marketing, the first all-in-one marketing platform powered by artificial intelligence. Bring all your digital marketing to a new level with their simple three-click method. And by Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet, the secure high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
He told me, I said, look, I'd like to sell this product in the United States because it was right. In Toronto. And he said, all right, no problem. He said, meet me in Toronto and bring $10,000 cash.
And we'll meet in a dark alley.
He goes, I'll make you my U.S. distributor and we'll get things started.
Sounds a little sketchy, but it wasn't sketchy.
It sounds sketchy, but I know.
But you did it.
I did it. Yeah. I mean, I met him. I went to his warehouse. He had lots of inventory. Yeah,
he didn't make you meet him in a dark parking lot.
Correct.
Yeah, right. I got it.
And I met him and he told me he'd like to expand. And I gave him $9,000 or something like that, $9,500, something like that in cash.
And that was for what? Supplies?
For supplies. Yeah. Okay. And then what he did is he sent a whole ton of supplies down to New Jersey and I rented a storage unit.
Okay.
And I kept all of the, all the items in there.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work. And they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Hey everyone, it's Mitch, your host, and welcome to today's show. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit beinhackerlaw.com or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview. On today's episode is one of my oldest friends, Scott Kochman, joins me from his apartment in New York City to talk about his entrepreneurial ventures and what he's doing now with his life. Probably my oldest friend. I met him on the first day moving into my home in West Caldwell, New Jersey on Oldham Circle. And it was so fun to have him on the mic and talk to him. So I hope you enjoyed today's episode.
All right. So we're on the mic. I think I can hear you clearly. You can hear me clearly?
I can hear you clearly, yeah.
Okay, good. So what a lot of people don't know is that you and I are, I guess, our oldest friends, right? I moved into my house in 1971. My sister was 1 year old and you were across the street.
Yeah.
And we met that day. So we were little kids with the other kids in the neighborhood.
Yeah. Speaking of which, I actually uncovered some old videos of us in bathing suits on the sprinkler on the front lawn.
Really?
Yeah, of my house,
really
just running around with David Terlizzi, one of our neighbors.
David's down in he's a nurse or a nurse practitioner down in Lakewood now.
Yep.
Yeah.
And on Stephen Gray, which is another one of our neighbors.
Do you know where he is these days?
He's in Texas, actually.
Oh, was he? Did he stay in Texas?
Yeah. So I do have these videos, and if anyone's
I remember the backyard was all trees and woods and mud, so it was definitely on your front lawn.
So I will be blackmailing you for those videos.
that's so funny.
We are a little embarrassing.
Yeah, I'm sure they are. Well, we were little kids. Now, your parents still live in that house, right?
They still live in the house.
They're probably the only ones that are left in the neighborhood. Everyone else.
I think so. Yeah. Most people have. Yeah. Almost all the houses have changed hands.
Yeah. All right. So, and what people don't know is that we really started our whole entrepreneurship journey together when we were little. We used to do all kinds of crazy businesses. What's like the first thing that you remember that we did? Was it the detailing business?
I mean, I remember us doing, were you involved with crank phone calls?
I might have been.
I think you were.
But that wasn't a business.
No, it wasn't a business, but we acted like a business, you know, like it was pretty organized. I mean.
Yeah. Because you played an instrument and.
I played the trumpet. Yeah.
And I played the clarinet for our show.
You played the clarinet. So that was part of our.
Oh, yeah. We used to call people up like a radio station.
Exactly. We'd say, hi, we're in a competition. Can you tell us what you think? And then I would play the trumpet and the drums at the same time with each one hand, and you would squeak along with the clarinet.
Because I wasn't very good.
Yeah.
And I think David was there too, right?
Yeah, he had the saxophone, I think. And then most people would just hang up on us.
Because we were terrible. But what was the entrepreneurship side of it? Was there a money? Was there a profit? I guess we thought it was, but it really wasn't.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
I think it was our first attempts at collaboration, sort of. But, you know, not for kind of more illicit purposes.
We did stuff in middle school to make money. I don't remember what it was, though. I know by high school I was detailing cars. We started to detail cars.
Yeah,
we used to use your parents' camper. We would go sometimes bring the cars to the house. And it was the days when detailing was like a new thing. Like people just go get their car washed.
Yeah. I mean, my parents had that camper, as you remember, and we used to fill it with the buckets of water
Do they?
No. It's long gone.
Yeah. That's my thought. It was an old
camper. And, you know, I think we kind of filled, it was this idea of filling a need, right? That, you know, when people were at work and they didn't have the time to be able to go get their car detailed. So we would kind of bring it to them.
Yeah. Plus, I remember once we got into high school and we had cars, we always wanted to do something with our cars, upgrade our stereos or get money. And we used to do that kind of stuff. So, okay. So I guess we started in college is really when you started, though.
And, you know, and this is kind of what I wanted to tell you about this idea, the accidental entrepreneur is.
Like that name? It's a good name, right?
I do like it. And it kind of, I would probably say that a lot of people end up being entrepreneurs by accident, right? It's not anything they teach you in school or whatever. And
no, not much. Now they kind of do. They have programs, but they didn't when we were young.
Yeah. And I had a, basically when I went after my freshman year of school, I tried marijuana. And
Syracuse.
In Syracuse, yeah.
So now you can't be on the Supreme Court those days.
Exactly. Well, it didn't do anything for me. And then I went to this guy who gave it to me. And I said, his name was Danny from Miami.
Okay.
He used to get FedEx boxes.
I'm sure
marijuana.
In those days you could FedEx anything.
Yeah. I mean, he would just get them. And he gave me this stuff. It must have been laced with something. And I had a very bad experience. Like I thought I was going to die, you know?
Okay. That's probably a good experience. Kept you away from the drugs.
Not really, because I was a music major, performance, trumpet, you know, and I was kind of thinking I was going to either play in a symphony or go into the music business, go to work for record companies.
Yeah, was that your major, the music business?
Yeah, that was my major. And then what happened is I started having these terrible anxiety attacks. And I couldn't really perform. And I would be freaking out. Even I had summer jobs.
Right.
I just felt like, I don't know, I just couldn't handle the pressure of having a job every day, because some days I really felt terrible. Like I felt full of anxiety, you know? I really kept it to myself, you know? I mean, I almost dropped out of college and, I was terribly depressed and, you know, my parents didn't really know what to do, you know, back then, you know, or like mid '80s, right?
Like, they didn't, get up.
Yeah. So they thought I maybe had food allergies and then they told, I don't want to go on and on, but basically.
No, but that's why you tried marijuana, right?
No. I tried marijuana because I was a freshman and other people were doing it. So I was like, all right, let me try it.
Right.
But then when I tried this other drug, whatever it was, marijuana again, but it must have been had something else in it. That kind of just did something to me. I don't know. It really.
Oh, you mean, and that's what started the whole
Yeah, that's what started the whole thing.
Oh, yeah. But you didn't continue to do it.
No, that was the very last time I ever did drugs in my entire life. You know what I mean? Like nothing right. after that experience could get me to, you know, I mean, in that sense, but not that, look, not like a meth head.
No, like I understand that.
I'm just saying like that experience really made me think that I really need to be in control of my career kind
yeah.
of, or, you know, like, so that kind of is what I'm saying about the accidental entrepreneur. All of a sudden I was like, well, I don't know if I can work for someone because what if I don't feel well for a week? You know, I can't just have, you know, I need it to be sort of feel like in control of my schedule.
Yeah. As opposed to somebody saying, hey, Scott, you got to be here and show up.
Exactly. You got to get on this plane. You got to be here in Dallas and, you know, and that's kind of what
started. And that was what, middle of college now?
Yeah. Maybe after the first year.
Oh.
I think that's when I started doing the card detailing.
Oh, okay.
You know, I was working part time at Denon and then.
Right.
I don't know how we got into it, sort of, and then we were doing it together.
No, the way we got into it was there was a news report or something about this stuff that's going on, mostly in California. And my uncle, remember my uncle had this little 300 ZX, like a Target
sure,
top?
Yeah.
So he wanted his car cleaned. I don't know if you remember this. And we went to his office building in like Livingston or something.
In Livingston, yeah, I do remember, yeah.
And cars started lining up. They were like, oh, will you clean our car? And that's how we started doing it because we realized there was a big demand to do it. But we were, I mean, you'd go out, we were working hard. We were
working hard.
Hot, soaking
wet. I did my car the other day and about 15 minutes in, I was like, oh my God, my forearm hurts.
What,
my
today?
Shoulder hurts. Today, but just... Yeah, just a few weeks ago.
Oh, I don't do any of that.
I was like, how do we do 2-3 cars in one day? I'm just like,
we were dead by nighttime.
What a difference it makes being like 19.
And we did it for like 50, 60 bucks a car. So we weren't making 60 much
bucks
money.
And we split it. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And sometimes we used to have some young kids working with us too. We'd have to pay them. It wasn't a big profit making kind of opportunity, but it was a good experience.
I think so. You know,
but that whole experience with the marijuana, that was in high school or college?
It was in college.
Okay. Because you started getting involved in other businesses in college, didn't you?
I did. I got involved in this fire safety kind of thing. Okay. And then I started a company called Discover. It was the first,
that they give you and you can charge money?
No. It was It was a mail order CD business.
Oh.
When CDs first came out, I didn't even own a CD player, but I kind of thought it was going to be the next big thing.
Like Columbia
and
House, kind of.
Yeah. And I started doing it and I did pretty well. You know, I hooked up with CD distributors. I advertised in national, I don't even know where, like, you know, like National Choir magazines and stuff like that, and had thousands of requests for catalogs and it was all mail order. You know,
and you were doing it bad from school?
I was doing it from school, and then one of my parents' friends actually approached me and said, look, if you want to drop out of school,
really,
I will finance you to open up a CD store.
And what a nice friend. Did they tell your parents? Oh, I just recommended to your son to drop out of school, and I'll pay him for it.
Well, I mean, I was kind of thinking anyway to drop out when I started getting all depressed and everything.
Right,
but
right.
Then I got a really cute girlfriend, and that kind of—
That helped.
That helped, yeah. And so I kind of bailed on it. I didn't move forward with it, you know.
Did you still do the catalog business?
I did the catalog business for a little while, but it became, prohibitively expensive in the sense that people, you didn't have the efficient methods of delivery that you have right now.
It wasn't
right?
Like Amazon, where they have huge warehouses.
Correct. So I would have had to invest thousands of dollars to really have the inventory necessary, you know, to have.
There was no internet in those days.
No internet.
It was mid-80s,
Exactly. So I kind of just let it fizzle out, you know?
Right.
I mean, but for a while it was pretty exciting. I think it was more of a learning lesson than anything.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of figuring out how to pivot on different things or thinking about the idea of how to scale or getting people, like, you know, I started hiring people to help me with my catalogs and helping me pack orders and stuff like that. So it was kind of
from your apartment in college.
Yeah. I mean,
You weren't back in the dorm forth. At that point, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you were?
With the dorm, but then I kind of would go back and forth to my parents' house sometimes and do all the shipping and stuff because they had – my mom had an art room and then I could use that. So it was – yeah, I mean, it probably went on for a good year or so. It wasn't a long-term thing, but
right.
I made some money, learned some stuff, and then I started the Entrepreneur Club at Syracuse. There was none, and okay. I started this club, and that was pretty interesting. And you know, we would bring in like-minded entrepreneurs, and then you know, then you start getting into thinking of this kind of idea of entrepreneurship, and surrounding yourself with other kids, right? That had this idea, and then
right.
And then all of a sudden, I thought, oh, all right, you know what? I guess I'm going to try and do something entrepreneurial,
right. Now, what happened with so the fire safety thing was before the CDs?
So the fire safety thing was at the end of college, I took a job where you could sell fire safety equipment.
Yeah, with a large corporation. It was like a
it was kind of a marketing
type of thing.
It was just kind of the easiest way to explain it is network marketing. But if you sold enough, you were able to get your own office and the company paid the rent.
Got it.
So what happened is towards the end of college, I went in for a job interview for this company and they were advertising you could make money and this and that. And I was like, I thought I would just try and make some money to make for spring break. And then what ended up happening is they were advertising at the time you could make $4,000 a month and you have your own office if you sold a certain amount. And I was like, wow, this is kind of interesting because it's kind of a job and it's kind of an entrepreneurial position also.
Right.
It's like you can work for someone, but yet at the same time, you could still have your own office.
You had your own
with a secretary.
Control over it, right.
Yeah. So all of a sudden, I was into like fire safety stuff. People thought I was crazy.
Really? That was the Halon stuff, right? Halon isn't used anymore.
Halon fire extinguishers. Yeah. Which, by the way, they still work.
I'm sure they do.
30 years later.
It's bad for the environment or something? Is that?
Well, at the time, they were saying that, you know, just I guess, you know. I mean, probably, you know, probably, you know, they changed all the regulations, so they phased that out. But
right.
But yeah, so it was a good kind of, I worked for the company and I ended up getting my own office and selling. That got me into learning about sales techniques and stuff because I had to sell fire extinguishers. And then I had my own office. I had a secretary, you know, I had similar, like the responsibility of a profession, but you kind of had the opportunity
right.
to kind of be your own boss.
It was all sales, so you really owned your own business. You were just making money
yeah,
from selling
pretty,
their
pretty
product.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. You know, at that time, I remember having a discussion with one of my friend's parents, because I remember being like, not sure this is the business I wanted to go into. And I talked to this guy and he told me, I remember having this whole argument. He was an entrepreneur. And
what did he do? Do you remember?
Some kind of financial thing.
Okay.
Some kind of, and he basically, I had this conversation like, well, you should, like when I got into entrepreneurship, I remember being passionate about, you should do what you love, right? You should, and that's the most important thing. If you do what you love, you're going to make the most money kind of thing. And he kind of really changed my mind and said to me, well, what I love is making money. Right. It was kind of a different perspective switch. Like he was, and that made me think like, so in other words, he didn't care really the nature of the business.
Right. He could do a lot of things to make money. Right.
Exactly. So that kind of shifted my perspective a little bit because I thought like it had to be like an industry that I happened to love.
Right.
But then I was like, wow, that's true. Like if you really just love the excitement and the challenge of making money, you could almost do anything.
Right. And it could be in different industries at different times of your life. It doesn't have to be like entrepreneurship is your industry.
Correct.
Yeah.
So that was kind of a pivotal learning lesson for me. And the fire safety company kind of went out of business. They had a lot of problems and I thought I could make it better. So then a couple of the guys like
who you had met, we
joined forces and we decided to full blown start our own fire safety company.
So you had to basically talk to a manufacturer to make the products and things like that?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. We had, yeah, we had to do all that stuff. We tried to reproduce what we knew. I mean, you know, what we learned. We took their existing system and tried to improve on it.
Right.
Which I imagine a lot of people do, right? I mean, how many people have worked for a restaurant and they sure. decide they're going to open up their own or
they can improve
things
it,
like that. So that's kind of what we did. But the business was a little bit sketchy, right? It was a little bit multi-level and I just knew that it wasn't going to be something that would last.
Right. Yeah.
For a while.
You did that for a while. We were living together in Secaucus, right?
Correct. Yeah. Right. And then I was up in Toronto and I saw this, you know, those little carts in the mall.
Those yeah, the kiosks carts. In the middle of
kiosks,
the mall.
Yeah. And I saw a really interesting product. It was like a personalized cartoon and they had a line of people buying stuff. And I thought it looked really interesting. And I got the name of the guy who...
The artist.
And he told me, I said, look, I'd like to sell this product in the United States because it was right. in Toronto. And he said, all right, no problem. He said, meet me in Toronto and bring $10,000 cash. And
we'll meet in a dark alley and I'll give you some marijuana.
He goes, I'll make you my U.S. distributor and we'll get things started.
Is this sounds a little sketchy, but when it wasn't sketchy?
It sounds sketchy, but I know, like.
But you did it.
I did it, yeah. I mean, I met him. I went to his warehouse. He had lots of inventory. Yeah,
he didn't make you meet him in a dark parking lot.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, right, I got it.
And I met him, and he told me he'd like to expand, and I gave him, like, yes, $9,000 or something like that, $9,500, something like that in cash.
And that was for what, supplies?
For supplies, yeah.
Okay.
And then what he did is he sent a whole ton of supplies down to New Jersey and I rented a storage unit.
Okay.
And I kept all of the, you know, all the items in there.
Right.
And actually, there's a very quick, funny story that goes along with this. So when I was about 25, I kind of got myself into a debt situation.
Like we all
Apparently, there's something called check systems. I don't know if you know what that is, but if you owe money to a bank, they'll actually blacklist you from having a checking account. And
okay.
So what happened is I got on that because I owed the bank.
So if you owe, let's say, Bank of America money,
yeah,
like an old credit card, and you go in to open a checking account.
I don't know if it's an old credit card, but let's say you bounce a bunch of checks and you owe the bank $150 in bounce check fees and you don't pay for 3 months. They can put you on check systems. It's kind of a universal background check.
So I don't know what is it. All the banks?
All the banks.
Okay.
Yeah. So my mother dragged me into Bank of America, which was at the time called Summit Bank.
Right. Bank of America bought a lot of banks, but Summit Bank is a local bank. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. So my mother dragged me in and she said, you know, you shut up. And she said to me, and she said to the banker, this is my son. He's a complete idiot. He's irresponsible. He's an adult, but he's a child. I mean, she went on and on and on.
That's your mom.
So the banker looked and she said, all right, I'll tell you what, I'm going to do something. She goes, I'm going to take you off the check systems.
Oh, she could do that?
She said, I'm going to take you off. You're going to pay me right now what you owe. And if you ever bounce a check again, you're going back on, right?
Okay. So basically you could pay her the fees that were owed.
Yeah, and she'll take me right off right then and there.
Okay.
And guess what? Been over 25 years. I've never bounced a check since.
Not even by accident.
Not even by accident, yeah. Actually, no, that's not true. I had something set up, overdraft protection.
Oh, okay.
That's anyway, so good. Here's the funny.
I just bounced a check last week. I had somebody cash a check from 6 months ago.
Wow.
And the bank account's already closed.
Oh,
it was like a
God.
Nonprofit organization. She goes, well, we don't deposit too often. I go, that was 6 months ago.
6 months ago.
And they deposited the check, so whatever.
Anyway, the funny story is the guy from Toronto needed me to open up a bank account for him in United States.
Right.
So I went to Summit Bank.
In his name or in your name?
In his name.
Why?
Because there were two things. One was like, there was the retail, which was I was doing, and he was the wholesale, but I would get money from the wholesales. a little bit complicated.
So you need to make deposits in his account.
He needed a bank account in his name.
In the U.S.
And right. He's in Toronto.
Right.
Okay. So I go into a different branch of Summit Bank because that's my bank. Right.
Right.
And they go, yes, you need to meet with the branch manager to discuss that. So I go into
this is a little checking branch account, right? We're not putting $40 million into the bank.
No. Right. Just $30 million. So I go in to go, you got to meet the branch manager. I go in to meet the branch manager. This is about 5 years after that fiasco with my mother and the check systems, right?
Okay.
And who do you think is, it's about 3 years after. Who do you think is the branch manager?
The same person.
It's the same lady from the other branch, right?
Right. But she knows you haven't bounced a check. Right?
No. Well, at first thought I was like, oh crap. Because they told me, look, there is no way we can open up a checking account in the United States for someone from Canada.
Right. Even if he came here.
Well, he could come. I think he'd have to come there.
Right.
It would be okay.
But he's still not a U.S. citizen.
He's not a U.S. citizen and he's not even here.
And by the way, this is before like the Patriot Act. Now you couldn't do it at all.
Yeah, but back then it was still sketchy. There was like no way you could do it. You have to have the guy come in and sign the documents.
Right.
How is he going to be the signer?
Right.
So when they said you got to talk to the manager and I saw that lady, I was like, there's no chance in hell I'm going to get this. So she says, she looks at me, she goes, you look so familiar. Right? And I was like, yeah, I know. I'm like, I get that all the time. You know, I just didn't say anything, you know? I'm like, and then we start talking, you know, schmoozing about life and everything.
She still didn't figure out who you were.
She had no idea who I was. No, okay. She wasn't like, you are the guy, you know.
Right. Your mother said you're a screw up.
Yeah. So we are schmoozing and we're talking about everything else but the banking. Okay. Which, by the way, is exactly the sales technique that I've used most in my life.
Develop almost a relationship with somebody. You disarm them. They trust you. You're
exactly.
You've always been very good at that.
So that
not in a bad way.
Yeah. But like, you know, sometimes the fire extinguishers, I go in someone's house and they have a picture of like their grandkid on the wall and they'll be like, oh my God, who's this with the fishing pole?
Well,
that's little Johnny. Oh, tell me about Johnny. And then before you know it, they'd be like, all right, what are you selling?
Right.
You know? So after talking to this lady, probably a good 30, 45 minutes in the bank, she said, all right, give me the paperwork. I'll approve it for you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, this is quite interesting. So she never figured out that.
Yeah, but nowadays she couldn't even do that. She'd probably have to have 27 people sign off on it.
Exactly, yeah. But back then you could kind of get away with it. But I was like completely shocked.
Right. But it wasn't, you weren't setting up the account to like launder money. It wasn't a bad thing.
No,
you just needed an account. Right.
Correct, yeah.
Okay.
But I mean, it was pretty interesting. And I think the entrepreneur lesson there is that a lot of people have is that it's amazing how many things can happen, right? If sometimes things line up, or it's amazing how many rules can be bent or things can be changed. And
it's all about relationships, right?
Yeah. I think it's kind of an entrepreneur mindset that like when people say this can't be done, you think I can do this, you know, or like,
right.
You know, and
you just got to figure out how.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that led
for a while though, right?
Yeah. Well, what ended up happening, the quick story is that it turned out that that guy had completely copyright infringed another company.
You mean his artwork wasn't his artwork?
His artwork wasn't his artwork.
He was stealing it.
He hired
copying
an artist. He almost exact duplicates of another company.
Oh, so he hired an artist and said, here's Scott's picture. So you recreate
it wasn't Scott's picture. No, it was his picture at that point.
No, I don't. I'm just using you as an example. You're the artist.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
So he said to the artist, the kid, whoever it was, listen, just duplicate this. And he didn't have any permission to do it.
None. It was a family member.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So basically, about 6 months into the new business venture, I received a massive lawsuit for like $1 million lawsuit.
From somebody you didn't even know who it was.
Someone I didn't even know.
Right. So you called your buddy up in Canada and said, what the F is this?
Yeah. So it turned into like a cease and desist letter.
Right, exactly.
Whatever. And then with the threatening of a lawsuit, actually. So it wasn't actually the lawsuit yet.
Right, right.
So I called them up and said, look, I'm selling this product in the mall. I'll make you a deal. How about once I finish, I have a lot of inventory. Can you let me just finish selling my, you know, selling for the next 2 months?
Get your money back at least, right?
Correct. And they said, okay, that's fine. As long as you, and I certified that I wasn't going to do it anymore. Right.
Okay. Fine.
But then by the end of that
season. And you
season,
were also an innocent actor in this. You didn't even know this guy.
Yeah.
Existed,
I told
right?
him, I said, I don't know who you guys are. I never heard
right.
of you guys.
The guy confirmed that it was his art. Yeah.
Yep. So what happened is they agreed to it. And by the end of the, by the end of that, it was like a Christmas season. I was in the mall.
Sell off or whatever we'll call
it.
Yeah.
And I made like $60,000, $70,000, a lot of it cash, you know, in 2 months. So I was like, wow, this is a good business. So I called them up. I said, look, you know, I'm done with that other product. I'm no longer infringing your product.
Right.
Can I sell your product?
Yeah. The hell with the other guy. Was this guy in the United States?
No, he was in Toronto.
They were
but the other company was in California.
The company that's the cease and desist company?
Correct. Yeah. The Toronto guy copied the California company.
So the guy in Toronto, this is like his cousin or something.
Correct.
Cousin in California. He stole his ideas.
Stole his idea. And I unknowingly jumped into
stepped
it.
Stepped in the middle. Well, actually, the guy in California probably never would have heard about it because it was all up in Canada.
I think so. Yeah.
So
and somehow
you
they
mistake.
Must have heard about it because here right. I am selling this. And so so basically, and I called the guy in Canada. I said, what am I going to do? They're going to sue me. He said, sorry, you're on your own, and hung up the phone.
You're kidding.
No.
Okay. I guess you weren't getting more product from him.
No. So then when I called the California company, I asked them, can I sell your, look, I did well with the product. Can I sell your product? They said, no, sorry.
They did say no.
Yeah. They said, no, we're not going to sell it to you. Like, we hate you. You infringed on us. I'm like, guys, I had no idea, you know?
Right. You don't even know. Yeah. You don't care. The other guy hung up on you.
So anyway, so then I said,
what was
this
it?
Is
Do you remember
good-
the name of that company? Are they still in business?
Yeah, it's called Outback Jack. They had a company called, product called Chuckies.
Oh, I remember that. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're still in business?
I think it's kind of like mail order now. They just kind of do it from home, I think.
Right. And for people listening, could you tell us what the concept was? Because it was a certain
So basically, it's like a little picture about 8x10.
Right.
And it's a cartoon, like of a guy playing golf or fishing or working at his desk. It's a generic cartoon. And then what you would do is you would run it. You would actually use calligraphy and you would write their name on it.
Right. So if I'm a lawyer and my kids want to get it for me for Father's Day, they would might put my name, Mitchell Beinhacker,
exactly.
Esquire.
Exactly. Name. And there's like a little door and you could put the name on the door. It was
Got
kind
it.
Of
So you
could
personalize these things.
Personalized thing.
Right.
So,
and you would do this in the mall, like right in front of people?
In the mall. Yeah. I hired girls and who had nice handwriting.
Right.
Because I try to hire guys and their handwriting's terrible.
That way, it's so true. It's very common.
I don't know whether that's discrimination.
That's probably like 80% of the time true.
Yeah. So that's, I don't think handwriting is what we call a protected class in terms
probably
of discrimination.
Not. But you
right?
found,
so,
regardless whether they're male or female, you found people that had good handwriting.
Had good handwriting. Exactly.
Right.
And then we would do that and we'd put the handwriting. Anyway, so what happened is the company said no. But meanwhile, I'm thinking to myself, wait a second, I just sold this stuff and it did really well.
Right. You got something.
I got something.
Yeah.
I made money.
You don't want to walk away from
it. And no
it.
One's doing it. In all of New Jersey, no one else is selling this in the malls.
Right.
I was
you didn't
like,
see
this
it
is
anywhere.
I didn't see it anywhere. This is an opportunity. So basically, I tried to innovate. And so what I did is I thought, you know, but I had a lot of problems with the calligraphy. The results were inconsistent.
Right. You wanted to do it like on a computer that would generate.
Exactly.
The
so what I did is I hired an artist. I ran contests in an art school.
Okay.
I offered $1,000 cash and I gave them a topic. I had said a man in a boat fishing, and I had maybe 10 different people.
That entered the contest.
Enter the contest and send me drawings. It was the Joe Kubik School for Cartooning. It's still around, I think, in Dover, New Jersey. And I had a whole bunch of submissions.
By the way, there's websites now, like freelancer websites, that you can do that with artists.
Yeah, like Upwork and stuff like that.
Yeah, you set up a little contest and they'll submit their stuff. Because you were looking for unique artwork. It couldn't look like the other guys.
Correct. So I hired an artist. I showed him the full catalog of the original guy's art.
So you make sure it's not the same.
I said, I want to copy the concept, but I want to make sure I do not infringe on their copyright. So I need the character is different. I need the scenes different.
Right.
And then when I had developed artwork, I went to a copyright attorney and did this. I handed him my artwork and I handed him the original person's artwork. And I said, is this copyright infringement?
Good.
Right. And they took the time. It costs a lot of money for them to go through all the pictures one by one.
Right.
And we made a couple of changes to some things. But essentially, we got a clean bill of health. They said it was not copyright infringement. And if someone brought a suit against you, you would prevail.
And now a word from our sponsors. NowSight Marketing, the first all-in-one marketing platform powered by artificial intelligence. It's everything you need to market online, and it's totally automated. Build custom websites, optimize them for Google rankings, and automatically create ads and social media posts to drive the most traffic to your sites. Their fully integrated system generates regular email newsletters, manages all your customers and prospects, and provides up-to-date marketing analytics. NowSight. You do your thing, and we'll do the marketing. Use our affiliate link in the show notes to learn more about NowSight and how it can help your business. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000. That's LAW to 21000. Or follow our link in the show notes to learn how you can get this valuable tool for you and your company. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their link in our show notes to learn more and get connected with Fetch. And now back to our show.
Now, the guy in Toronto, was his character the same name?
Pretty much. Not the same. His was Outback Jack.
Right. And what was the guy in California?
Cowboy Chuck. If I showed you that they were the same scene, same, everything was the same.
Right. He stole the whole thing and just changed the guy's
name. The same thing. I mean, look, if you have a guy going fishing, you can have many different varieties of that.
No, but they would do the exact same scene.
Same scene. No originality at all.
Right. Okay. That's funny.
So essentially I got a clear bill of health from that. And then to eliminate the whole thing with the calligraphy, I hired a guy. Actually, it turned out to be a disaster. I ended up going through four different programmers.
Oh, you programmed your own software at that point.
Correct. And it was like, and then we actually printed up the cartoons. We are later evolved to print on demand, where when inkjet technology became more,
now advanced, it's probably even easier. Laser printers and everything. Yeah.
I mean, even then we had some people had laser printers, but what we pretty much did is print the name. But so essentially we went out into the market with a new and improved version of that product with, better cartoons. We had more consistent results. I made it easier to print the names, and it became quicker. There was less waste, things right. like that.
So the color photo was done.
It was all printed. Yeah.
And then the computer would add in the name and whatever.
Correct. Exactly. Yeah. But I mean, that was a whole mishigas, which whole big mess on its own, because if the print went in a slightly crooked, the name wouldn't come out in the same spot. And then if you did a print run and then you did another print run 6 months later, they might not have been cut the same. The prints might have not been cut by the printer. So then you put the next one in and all of a sudden it prints a quarter of an inch. Yeah. So anyway, but it worked out pretty well for the most part. And then as soon as I opened, guess what? Within 6 months, Then I got a full-blown lawsuit. No cease and desist.
Cowboy just Chuck.
Cowboy Chuck, full-blown lawsuit.
Right, but you had already done the research. You had the lawyer. You knew you had a firm ground to stand on, right? Okay.
So this was an interesting. Now, they were in California, and they hired an attorney from Newark. Okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the time, you know, Newark was pretty run down, right? So I pretty much assumed that that attorney was not very expensive,
Law firms in Newark. There were then too.
Well,
very big.
Possibly. But what I did, which was, I think, kind of innovative at the time, is I went to an attorney, a law firm on Park Avenue on purpose in the city.
Right.
I remember it was $350 an hour.
This is what
year? At that time. This is 94, 93.
Okay. Yeah.
It was significant. And I remember I only had about, because, you know, I just started the business. I invested $50,000 to do the pictures.
Right.
Probably I blew another $20,000 in the programming.
Right.
So I only had about $12,000 left to my name, pretty much.
Right. But the business was still generating cash.
It was still generating some income, yeah. But I needed a big out. So basically, bottom line is I just went for it, and I spent everything I had on the attorney in a way to posture myself.
To get rid of these guys.
Yeah. And that's what eventually happened. They eventually settled with no financial. They dropped this lawsuit, and they promised that we made them have in writing that they wouldn't,
they couldn't
sue me again.
Yeah. Right. They had to walk away from, and they could exist in the marketplace just like you could.
Correct. Yeah. They had to, we had them admit that my product was not infringing their product, just in case. I thought they might try and scare future customers away, you know, with the threat of a lawsuit.
Disparagement, that kind of stuff, non-disclosure.
Yeah.
So what I remember the name, the company was called Friendly Folks, right?
Yeah, it's Friendly Folks. And that did well. I mean, we lasted. I mean, of course, like any business, it had its ups and downs. And at one point we had to shut down and for 6 months and come up with new software. Well, it just... the product.
Technical problems?
Well, no. As we increased the amount of cartoons,
right,
it became prohibitive. Like once we had like 300 cartoons, you had to buy the physical cartoons. So now if we sold them 10 to a pack, 300, if you wanted the full product line, you had to have 3,000 cartoons in stock.
Oh, you were doing like almost like a licensing arrangement with
dealers.
Correct.
So then I start, exactly. So I turned to wholesale. And I started bringing in, you know, hundreds of dealers around the country.
Right.
But not everyone could afford $5,000 investment.
Yeah, but the startup costs were too much because these were mostly small operators looking to do a small little business.
Correct. Yeah. So at that point, luckily, we kind of retooled to the what we call print-on-demand system with a royalty.
By then, you were on the internet. Was there was internet already, right?
Yeah, and then we got on the internet, and But I mean, most of our advertising was by print. Still, we weren't really doing anything online at that point.
Well, the internet only came around like 92, 93. So you're talking
true, yeah,
yeah. So and you were in. Then, if I remember, you were like Teterboro, right? You were over in.
We were in Teterboro. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I remember that.
And we did really well. And actually, the Chucky's Cowboy Chuck Company, they copied our idea in terms of wholesaling, and they started opening up distributorships too, which was because they never had it at that point. I guess they thought we were going to be a company and only they didn't want to have dealers. So they started their own dealer program, I guess, to compete with me.
And we don't know if they're still in business or not.
Not in that respect, not doing the, I think they just make them probably from home and they still sell them. I went to their website. They still do. They still have stuff.
So. Oh, they have a website still?
I'm pretty sure. Yeah. I haven't looked in a while, but.
I remember you had like one assistant and maybe one guy in the warehouse, right? And if you'd call, they'd be like, oh, you need to reach purchasing? Let me transfer you. And you'd transfer them to the 8th floor. It was really a little
exactly.
company.
Yeah. We got this phone system, Packet 8. If anyone remembers, that was when VoIP phone systems
first came. It was like the early days of VoIP?
The early days of VoIP. And then you could call up and there'd be a general message. It'd be like, for sales, press 1. Right. For customer service, press 2.
And they all went to you.
Yeah, exactly. They all went to my cell phone or to the office phone.
Right.
For shipping, press 4. You know, right. It was like,
that's so funny. Yeah, because you could act like a big company, right? But
big, yeah, exactly.
Even nowadays, you can do that. Yeah.
It was all smoke and mirrors.
Right. But you could do even more of that now. Yeah. You can operate as a big company for very little money, you know?
You know, and I think the problem with being an entrepreneur, for me at least, is that the whole business pretty much died in 2007. It was, you know, once the iPhone came out and apps and things like that, people could do this type, you know, this thing didn't seem really cute anymore. Right. You know, it didn't seem really interesting anymore because it was like,
they're more fascinated with, on the online and nobody wanted a printed photo. They're going to put on their wall, a printed artwork. They wanted it on their phone.
Yeah. And also the limits of personalization that we had were, limited basically.
Right.
You know, because we can only, you know, we didn't have the technology to go in and change all the pictures and stuff like that. But once iPhone came out and apps came out with all this, you know, animation, people are like, oh yeah, I need a print, but my husband's bald. But you know,
right. They want to change everything.
He's a little chubby. He has a goatee and he has big ears. Can you do that? No, we can't do that.
Yeah, but see, you know, nowadays you probably could have built a company into something like that where they can go online, pull up the character, add all the things to the character they want, pick the scene it goes into, and it's probably easy to do now. But then it was hard.
I've considered it. I mean, I have I own the full catalog of artwork. I've almost considered just bringing in a new.
It's like, have you seen those whiteboard animation softwares?
Yeah.
So you literally can just put all the pieces together, press a button, and then it animates it. You probably could build that nowadays. Probably a lot easier than it was.
I thought about it, you know, making it an app, and maybe you can even print it out and stuff like that.
Yeah, you do it all on your own. You print it in black and white or color. You can print it in black and white and color it in on your – you wouldn't produce anything. You would just make the website where people order make the photo themselves, make the picture themselves, put all the personalization in, and they can print it out. They pay for it and they get a download.
Yep, exactly.
You don't need any inventory at all.
After a while doing something for a while, you just kind of lose.
Yeah, you lose interest, whatever.
I'm just like, all right, I don't know if I want to go do that again. Like it was cute. It was good.
I mean, I don't know what the monetary opportunity is to make. I mean, you know, how much money could you make? I don't know.
And it's all done. It would have, you know, all our sales were done in person, retail, and
this would all be online.
At the malls, craft shows, and with all the online stuff going on right now, this product does not translate well, you know.
Well, you'd have to create something that people could use, like on their social media page or something like that.
Correct, I mean, that being said, like what we talked about earlier, anything could be done. You know, if you really want to do it, it could be done.
Right. Well, if you ever find somebody who's interested in artwork and this type of thing, you could sell them the whole concept.
And actually, along the way, we actually created something called we got into this music, personalized kids music.
Right.
So I developed an album. We ended up selling actually that part of the business.
You mean where you wrote the music and recorded?
Yeah, I wrote the music with my friend Corey, and then we recorded it, and that actually was a lot of fun. That was more fun.
I remember Corey. Weren't you working on a Broadway play with him?
We were working on a Broadway musical with him, and I ended up getting sidetracked, and I kind of
bailed
on it, which is terrible. Actually,
did he ever finish it?
He didn't, because he was kind of doing the music, and I was kind of what they call the torch carrying producer. You know, like I was financing the whole thing, and you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure, as you know, most entrepreneurs have 5 ideas they'd like to do, 5 ideas that they were working on that they didn't finish.
Right. No. Look, everybody's an entrepreneur nowadays, but I think that somebody who's got like a business, just one business, and that's all they do, not really sure if they're entrepreneurs. The guys that I know that are entrepreneurs, like you and I, we always have something on the burner. We always come up
something
with an
burning,
idea.
Yeah.
You might not be pursuing it, but it's sitting there. And then one day you're like, oh, wait, we can make money doing this, you know? And that's always how we've always operated. So Friendly Folks kind of collapsed in 2007, you said?
Yeah, Friendly Folks collapsed around 2007, 2008. I mean,
when the real estate market collapsed.
Yeah, it was basically like on life support at that point. And at your height,
how many dealers did you have at your peak?
Oh, we had hundreds, and we had people around the We had hundreds of people around the world, and I didn't scale the business like I probably could have as much, right. But I mean,
well, logistically it was issues, right?
Yeah. I was kind of living sort of this bachelor lifestyle, and
yeah, because you were living in the city then, right? Weren't you
living in the city? But then I moved to Alabama, and I was like, it's a long story, but essentially,
well, that was to help Mark with the fire extinguisher business, right?
Correct. Yeah, like he went COO off and did his own thing.
CFO.
Yeah. But I and then also I made a big investment in a .com business.
Uh huh.
What was in that? 1999, and that
Amazon.com.
I actually, and I'll put it on the record, I remember when Amazon started and they were selling books and stuff like that. Yeah. I remember telling someone I thought it was a dumb idea.
There you go. I'm sure you're not the only one who said that. Most of his family was like, you're going to sell books online? That is stupid.
I was like, come on, a book, you got to pick it up. You got to hold it.
Look at it.
It's just a tactile feeling
to
a book.
Boy, were we dumb.
Yeah, really stupid.
Right. But he didn't care about the books. It was just the first product that he was selling because he thought it was conducive
to do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. Correct.
But yeah. I know. Yeah.
It goes back to your friend's advice about, well, I like making money. Exactly. Like Jeff Bezos wasn't like a book lover.
No, but I just thought it was a dumb idea even to make money.
Right.
I
was
going to
buy things on the internet. I mean, that's stupid.
Yeah.
I know. Our whole life is
really, really
now.
Dumb. And so then after that fell apart, I mean, I was trying to hold on for dear life, but it was a rough time, you know, because I was terrified because I didn't really have any particular resume, right? I mean, I guess
your resume was you're an entrepreneur.
Yeah, but
you had a lot of business experience, but that sometimes it doesn't translate to a job. Like it does.
Yeah, I mean, I'm like mid-40s guy, you know, and I don't really, you know, I can't. Yeah, I didn't know.
What was the .com that you invested in?
Just energy.
It was an energy business?
It was an energy business that was going to go on the internet. And it was doing really well. I was going to have like, I bought 60,000 shares.
Okay.
And so they
were. And what was the concept? How would they?
It was like deregulated energy.
Okay.
And so it was when these new companies were coming out, you know, that you didn't have to go to like your local utility company. These companies were bringing deregulated energy from, you know, some like they have them now from like clean energy, renewable energy suppliers and stuff like that. And so pretty much you could just, they were going to be able to provide energy cheaper because they, we're deregulated.
Yeah, companies like that now, like Viridian, they're like network marketing companies, and you basically sign people up to go through your company, and they buy it cheaper because you buy it in bulk or deregulated or whatever.
So
was that the concept?
That was the concept, yeah, and it was really the first of its kind, and
they just didn't execute properly.
No, what happened is they were like they needed like a final round of funding or whatever, and it was right. Once the .com busted all that thing, then basically the investors went away. People were just
All the money disappeared.
All the money disappeared, and they just couldn't fully execute. I mean, they were doing really well,
right?
And I had the actual matter of fact, it was so difficult to even they wouldn't even take my money. I had to lie and say I was a qualified, you know, investor at that point.
You had to be an accredited investor.
Like, yeah, accredited investor, right? Yeah. So you have to have,
you had to have a certain amount of net worth.
Half a million in the bank or a million in the bank.
Your income had to be $200,000 a year over the last 5 years or you had to have $1 million in net worth.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah, I totally forgot that. Yeah,
it's basically
it was something
the
like
rules.
That. Yeah. And I just basically lied about it.
Well, you just filled out the questionnaire. He said, yes.
Exactly. So I had 60,000 shares, and they were expected to have an IPO at $10 a share and then maybe go up from there, you know? So I was like,
sounded good to me.
This is going to be good, you know?
Yeah. But that was a passive investment. You weren't active in that business, were you?
I was.
Oh, you were?
I started working for the company, and because that's the only way they would allow me to invest.
Ah, got it.
It's kind of interesting.
How did you find the company?
It was a guy that I knew, actually.
Networking, yeah.
Yeah.
Basically.
And, I worked for them. I mean, that was while I was doing the Friendly Folks, and I basically just turned Friendly Folks over for a year to the people that were kind of you know, like this girl, Janice, that was running the company for me, and then worked full time on this doing sales. I was working with different organizations and AARP to kind of, you know, bring discounts to seniors and all right. kinds of things. And it was, oh well, you know. So yeah, I lost a lot of money on that.
Yeah. So then apparently folks, you let just Janice run yeah. it until it died?
Pretty much, yeah.
And then you were living in the city at that point. Is that when you got into real estate?
So I was living in the city, and then I went from the nice apartment, and then I moved to a
less expensive
not a nice apartment.
Apartment.
Not a nice apartment, and then I went to a really not nice apartment where there was a mouse that I had.
You bootstrapped
and,
your life.
Yeah, I had mice, and I lived with the mice. I like made friends with them. I used to feed the mice, and
that would keep them there then.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I remember I had my girlfriend over, and all of a sudden a mouse ran across the room.
She freaked out.
She did freak out, actually. She goes, you have a mouse. Did you know that? And I was like, wow, this is good. I thought she was going to freak out.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's a good test. Yeah. So, were you in the real estate business at that point? You started selling
real
estate?
No, I wasn't in the real estate business at that point. And I was, okay. Girl that I was friends with, she got into real estate, before that I was scrounging to make money. So I would be like, you know, a real hustler, you know, she would be like, oh, I need help with this and I need help with that. And then I would do it. Like there was this one point where she faxed something in her company and it was like something that was going to cost the company like $15,000. And it was a total mistake. And,
Yeah, they had fax machines in those days.
Yeah, she was like really in bad shape and she was going to lose her job and everything. And we tried to prove to American Express that we had faxed a letter, that we had canceled the order or whatever. And, it was for, we were renting hotel rooms. So she wasn't actually buying any product.
Okay.
And so we called them up the next day and said, look, I'm sorry, we made a mistake. It was the wrong date. You know, this big company meeting was a different date.
Can we
change the date? And they were total jerks about it. And they were like, no, sorry, it's non-refundable. You're going to lose $15,000, which was totally unethical.
Right.
So, you know, at the time, you know, I made up a, you know, like, she paid me $500 to, you know, make up a letter, a cancellation letter. And then using Photoshop, I made a receipt, fax receipt, you know, and I was able to get the money, save the company the money back, you know. And then we still booked the rooms, but we decided to go to a different hotel chain.
Which you probably wouldn't have done if they'd been accommodating to you.
Yeah, exactly. So I didn't feel guilty about that. They were really, you know, so they were able to reverse the charge and stuff. But what I'm saying, we were doing, you know, that then once I did that, then she would, I mean, we were doing all kinds of entrepreneurial things. Anything, the company was farming out different, they needed different people to do stuff. And then I was like building websites for them. And then, you know, I'd make 500 here, I'd make 3,000 here, make 2,000 here. I was like doing...
Just hustling for money.
Hustling. Yeah. You know, any kind of entrepreneurial thing, I was doing it. And then she got into real estate and she had this job offer. This was an interesting story. She worked for like a rental company.
Okay.
And she's Chinese. And this is right when a lot of Chinese started buying in New York.
From overseas, yeah.
From overseas, yeah. And she got approached. We were at a party. She invited me to some party at Tourneau Madison Avenue.
Yeah, Tourneau is the watch company, yeah.
The watch company. And there was a group there from Sotheby's, which, you know, they were high-end real estate.
Yeah.
And they approached her and they said, how would you like to work for us? And you could be our Chinese agent, you know?
Because they didn't have anybody who was Chinese.
Yeah, they were going to refer her like tons and tons of business. And she almost didn't take it because she liked the company that she was with. I was the one. I was so jealous because at that time I was so broke, right? I mean, I was like...
But you weren't Chinese, so...
Exactly. And I was like... But I was friends with her and I knew this was the best move for her. So I encouraged her to go along with them. And so she worked for them, but she's kind of like a pretty entrepreneurial herself. And within 6 months. And by the way, I was helping her the whole time.
So you were like, kind of her assistant kind of a thing?
I was kind of her unpaid assistant, actually.
Oh, unpaid.
Yeah. I mean, literally, she would be like on a business trip to Hong Kong, and she'd be, you know, emailing me and asking me how to handle certain situations and what to do about this and that and whatever. And so what happened is we were almost like business partners, and she got in a big fight with them because she thought she was being undercompensated. And one day she called me up and said, you know what? I'm out of that company. I'm not working for them anymore.
The real estate
company. Yeah. And she's like, would you like to work with me in real estate? And I was like, absolutely.
Sure. Yeah.
I was like, sure, let's do it. So it was kind of a weird way it kind of worked. But, you know, I was just kind of working with her. I tend to do that now too. I always see, you know, different, I'm always looking out for new opportunities and things.
Of course, you should. I mean, you don't know what's going to change, especially nowadays. Yeah. Talk about resilient. Things change on a dime nowadays. You got to be ready for the next pivot or whatever.
So that's So
but
I
that
got
didn't just put
her.
You into the real estate market. It kind of put you into the Asian real estate market, right?
Yeah, which is pretty much the real estate market. Yeah, but most of my clients now are Asian. Yeah,
right.
And it was kind of a good fit, you know. I mean, it was definitely good, and did pretty well. I'm still doing well with it.
Right.
Now, of course, things are a little bit slow with the coronavirus and stuff.
A little bit, yeah, right. Not too many people coming from Asia moving here.
Yep. But I'm working on actually developing a cosmetic product right now.
Okay, so you are working on. I was going to say, are there any entrepreneurial ventures you're working on? So
you know, I think this the whole coronavirus thing kind of made me think of kind of my original thing, which was, you know, how I mentioned to you about feeling insecure about having a job that you have to go to.
Right.
Now I'm feeling a little bit insecure
about
a job.
Not having a job to go to.
No, I mean, something that requires face-to-face contact
right.
on a daily basis.
Yeah, that's going to be so impossible nowadays.
So I started thinking, what can I do? How, you know, online products and things, you know, things, how you can make money, you know, like now's the time. I would love to be like buy a farmhouse somewhere in Connecticut and just be like hanging
remote
out there.
Working. Yeah.
Remote exactly. working. Yeah.
Yeah. No, and, the people don't want to do face-to-face stuff anymore.
So there's a, you know, kind of like a skincare product that I've been kind of using for many years. Actually it's like a shaving cream actually. And I almost have to thank you, actually, for your father. Your father. I had very bad problems with shaving. My face was always red, and I developed like facial hair early on, like 13, 14.
Right.
And your dad once, I guess, saw the problems that I had when we were hanging out. And your dad gave me this shaving cream. It was pink. I don't know if you ever remember it. It's just,
no, I don't remember.
If you ask your dad about it, he would know. It was like okay. A big jar that they used in the barber shops, and it was like a pink cream.
Right.
And
you use like the brush and you put it on your face?
You know, you didn't even need the brush.
No,
for
just
that.
Rub it on with your hands. Okay.
Yeah, you just rub it on with your hands, and that kind of saved me. And I was like, wow, this is like was a transformative product for me. And I've been using different varieties of it ever since. And now I'm kind of developing my own. Oh. I used Upwork. I have a chemist, you know, doing formulations right now in Bosnia.
And you found them through Upwork.
Through Upwork, yeah. And
Bosnia. Wow.
Bosnia,
I know.
Is
there like a war going on in Bosnia? Or
no? No, I think that's over.
Oh, you know okay, what
I
mean?
But
good.
There was some shrapnel in my last package that I received from them. And a thumb. I don't know if that was a warning or something like that. But,
you know. Oh, got it.
But yeah, I'm, you know, kind of getting, I'm going to, you know, right? I mean, you look on Instagram and Facebook and all this stuff. So
all you got to do is get someone famous to use it and to promote it on TikTok.
Yeah, I've basically taking advantage of all these kids that are, you know, not working right now. So I put an ad in for like some internships and I'm getting phone calls and, you know, I'm going to basically hire some young people to pretty much run the whole business, you know, and do social media because I'm terrible with social media, you know.
Yeah, it's stuff we didn't grow up with. It's difficult.
I feel like, I don't know. I was always into videoing and stuff like that, but I'm just.
Yeah, now you can do YouTube and stuff. You'll have to do demonstration videos for the stuff.
Exactly.
It doesn't have to be you. Somebody else can do it. But
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah. You know, I'm kind of excited about that. I also have a another product I've been developing that's an oil. It's like a hot sauce kind of.
Okay.
That it's a very unique hot sauce that is only it's served in certain restaurants in Flushing, which is a Asian community in a suburb of the city.
Right, in Queens.
I mean, it's in Queens, so it's actually a borough of New York City. And I love it. I put it on everything.
It's an oil.
Sounds like, so you just that put a sounds few like drops? The Frank's. That right. sounds like the Frank's hot sauce. Right,
ad, exactly. Right? But is this something you found that you want to sell, or is it something you developed?
It's something I found, but they make it with. A lot of the Chinese places give it to you for free,
okay.
And it's made with really unhealthy soy oil and cheap ingredients.
So you're coming up with a healthier version.
I'm coming out with a healthier, made with like avocado oil, organic,
right.
You know, everything's organic and stuff like that. So I'll have to bring you a sample next time.
Well, you've always been into a lot of health and wellness. I remember you used to go, when we were younger, to the days when the health food stores were like, it wasn't like Whole Foods. It was like these little mom and pop shops where only the health food nuts would go to. And
yeah, the granola
wasn't like an industry now. Yeah. Like everyone's in health food now. But in those days, you had to like find these places.
Well, I think I got into it because of the problems that I had, you know?
Maybe, like, right.
Yeah. Because I don't think I did that in high school. It was after college
and stuff like that.
Right. Yeah.
And are you vegan now or vegetarian or?
No, I'm just vegetarian.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that means you'll eat eggs and the stuff like that. You just won't eat the actual chicken.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't eat eggs by themselves. That kind of the texture, it's like a texture.
Yeah.
Thing
it's not because you're vegetarian. You just don't like them.
Yeah. It's just like kind of rubbery and kind of weird, you know, like same, whatever. But, but yeah, if you give me a good brownie,
you're fine.
I'll eat it all up.
You don't care.
You know?
All right. Well, so if somebody wants to connect with you, can they connect with you? Are you on social media or online? Or are you just like off the grid?
Yeah. I'm on Facebook, you know?
Okay. So they can look up Scott Kochman on Facebook, connect with you and learn about all your entrepreneurship, and you're available for guest appearances and or is this just a special for me coming on a podcast?
I think it's just a special for you.
Yeah. Well, we could go on for hours. We could tell stories that I don't want to tell on the mic.
All kinds of crazy
of the funny
stories.
Things that we've done on.
And let me reiterate, anyone who sends me $50 will get those videos of Mitchell running around in his bathing suit.
I don't have a problem with that. So you give half of it to like.
That's my new entrepreneurial idea, actually. I might be able to make some money with that.
You probably could. All right. Yeah. Let me.
But wait, should we tell them about our sauce?
Oh, the sauce that we made. Well, you really made the sauce. It was just the idea the commercial idea you had?
Yeah, so
that'd be a good way to wrap this up, actually. That's a good answer.
Yeah. So I was hanging out with this guy. You know the famous pianist Arthur Rubinstein, if you've heard of him.
This so was after college, right?
This was after college. Right. I was friends with his grandson.
Okay.
And he went to a music camp with me.
Okay, right.
And I would hang out at their house that they would have a full floor apartment on the Upper East Side. And of course, I didn't think there was anything interesting about that, right? Like, I just thought, I live in a house in New Jersey. You live like in an apartment. Like, it didn't seem like anything exciting, you know? And his mother introduced me to this technique of making a pasta sauce where you take olive oil and you saute the garlic in olive oil.
Okay.
And then you kind of add in the other ingredients like the tomatoes and all that kind of stuff. And then you let it simmer. And then as it simmers, you filter off some of the olive oil on the top. And she learned this from a restaurant chef.
Okay.
You know, of a restaurant that she frequented, whatever. And so she taught me this technique. And all of a sudden I became like the king of pasta sauce.
Because everyone loved it.
Everyone loved it.
Anytime
I was invited over someone's house, they're like, Scott, you got to make the sauce.
Right.
Right. And so, and then I guess I talked to you about it. And then you and I talked about making it commercially.
Were we living together at that point? Or was this after?
I don't know. We did live together, of course.
Right. A couple of years.
And, I think it might have been before.
Maybe.
So we came up with this absurd name for a pasta sauce called Beinkotch.
Well, that's because it just started half our names.
Yeah. There's but I mean, who? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I don't know. Whatever. Well, we were just kids.
I don't know. Who knows? Maybe it was such a stupid name that actually what it might have sold.
But we never made the sauce.
We never made the sauce and we never really pursued it.
But you had a great idea for a commercial. It was really your idea. Yeah.
So I had this idea for this commercial.
Right.
We're going to advertise it on television. So there was going to be this scene where the camera, you know, fades from black and it's a nighttime scene and you see three storefronts. Storefront in the middle is like the Beinkotch pasta sauce store with jars of pasta sauce lined up.
Right.
The store to the left is a jewelry store.
Right.
You know, diamonds with shiny diamonds.
Right. Gold. Right.
Gold, everything. And the store to the right is maybe a Furrier.
Right. Or, something like that. Expensive.
Louis Vuitton handbags or something like that.
Right.
And then the announcer comes on and says, in 1976, New York City experienced a
major blackout, right?
Then the light fade to black,
right?
And you hear the sounds of glass
windows
smashing,
crashing, yeah,
windows crashing, looting, basically. And then the light comes back on. You see some guy, you know, the
like a robber, like with a mask on or something,
yeah, with a mask on, and he's like holding a Beinkotch. The Beinkotch store to pasta sauce is completely looted.
Right.
And the light comes back on and he's holding up jar and he drops it and runs off. Like,
and the other two stores are untouched.
Intact. No one touched the diamonds or the Gucci, the first store.
Right. That was a great commercial. You said. That was the best commercial never made, right?
The best commercial never made. So we're putting it out there.
Maybe, yeah, if anybody's listening, they could use it for their
product. Go ahead. You know what I mean? We would, since we haven't done anything with it in 20 years,
it's in the public domain.
It would be really great to someone else to see it. Yeah.
All right.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.